From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in a small package that will arrive today at a small house on a street you've probably never been to. A child, maybe 5 years old, will tear into that package knowing what's inside. A book and an audio recording and a short note. The voice on the audio recording is their mom or their dad reading the book from prison. The message will say something hopeful. I hope you're doing well. I hope to see you soon. And it is just one book, but it is, and for many of them, the only way they're staying connected to mom or dad during their incarcerations. On the surface, this kind of program makes so much sense that you might assume it's conducted in every American jail or prison. Kids at home, mom or dad locked up, send them a recording of your voice, reading a book, letting them know that you love them, giving them some hope too. And yet only about 50 facilities across the country offer this kind of connection and program. Our tax dollars pay for so much to incarcerate people, but as cheap as this program is, it is not covered. It's almost always run by volunteers, local libraries, and private donations. Now, one of these programs is happening in Ontario County. The Ontario County Jail in Canandaigua offers the Storybook Program, and a new documentary tells its story in gripping and occasionally heartbreaking fashion. The film is called Turn the Page. This hour, we'll explore American incarceration, the impact on children, and how programs like this can make an impact. Let me welcome my guests. Claire Creamer is here, the founder of the Storybook Project. You're going to see her in the film. Claire, it's nice to see you in studio. Thanks for being here.
Oh. Thank you.
Also here is Linda Maroney, the filmmaker, the director of Turn the Page, and someone who I've been talking to about this project, which, and you were just saying, feels like forever.
Yeah, I think I actually went in to Ontario County for the first time in December of 2009. So it's been quite some time.
Wow. And so in December of 2014, I remember, you know, Christmas was coming. And I don't remember exactly why there was a discussion on the program about something about, you know, rates of incarceration. And I thought, but we never talk about the kids on the other end. So I started reaching out, and someone pointed me to Linda because I found out you're working on this project. And I know, as films go, especially, you know, sort of
independent films.
That's the word we were looking for. It takes a while to tell the story. And here you are finally ready to do it. But I was so gripped by this idea, this program that I didn't know existed. How did you find out about the Storybook?
Well, I am a filmmaker, as you said. I'm also a mom. And I tend to read the Democrat and Chronicle, because that's our local paper here, every day. And often I'm looking for stories. You know, what would make a good film? And I read one day about Claire receiving a potted plant from a church in Irondequoit for being a bold woman of courage for starting this program. And I thought, wow, that's lovely. But it seems such an amazing story. I had no idea, you know. And like you said, I knew nothing about children of incarcerated parents and what goes on there. So I read to my kids every night. It's a really, really special and sacred time. And, you know, I thought if I drove home from a party one night and had too much to drink and got into a car accident, I could be in the jail and it would be me. And I would have to give up that bedtime story. So, you know, I reached out to the reporter, and the reporter put me in touch with the church, and the church put me in touch with Claire. And I had to gain Claire's trust and then approach Ontario County to see if they would be permitting to let me bring in film crews and document.
And you do. And the film, you can see the film next Thursday night. It's a week from tonight. The Little Theater is going to show it. Turn the Page at 7:30. There's a 6:30 pre-reception. And so next week, it's a big night for you in the film. What's going on?
It's a big night. I mean, we haven't really shown it to a big audience. Claire hasn't even seen the completed
you
film.
You haven't seen the film, Claire?
No, I haven't.
You're fabulous in it.
Well, that's good. Thank you.
You're funny and touching and moving, and we're going to talk about that in a second.
So don't give it away, Evan.
Well, you know. So next Thursday night is your chance to do what with it, Linda?
Well, we are trying to raise the finishing films to get the film out there. There's, you know, it's an independent film. We have been given some grants along the way, but you know, it's difficult to raise money for independent documentaries. So there's a little bit of money left that we need to raise to cover media rights and some other rights and finish some music. And then once it's all done, we can start showing it, giving it to film festivals and hopefully public television and hopefully community screenings. I mean, ultimately, I really, really hope that we can create a toolkit that goes along with this and at various community screenings so other communities can set up their own version of Storybook in their own jails and prisons.
Yeah, you know, I want to make clear, as we always do on WXXI and here on Connections, you know, we can't endorse charities, fundraisers. You can make the decision as a listener if you want to support it. And Linda is someone who I feel fortunate enough to call a friend over the years, but I wouldn't say that I know a lot about this project, only in that what I've had a chance to hear about and now to finally see it, it's beautiful. As a parent myself, it is really, really moving. And as a reporter who spent a lot of time in the Hall of Justice, and I've said this on the program before and I'll say it again here, some of the worst days I've had as a reporter are not even just covering the worst of the worst crimes, and that can be very, very difficult. But it's in seeing a toddler holding maybe a grandparent's hand as they walk into a courtroom with a distant look in their eyes and just thinking, what is next for this child? And so this program that Claire is fortunately for so many families, brought to our community, it's so important. So Claire, let's go back to 2005, 6, is that right? When was it? When did you start this?
Oh, it got off the ground 11 years ago, but it took a good year to really get it set up, so.
Okay, and in the film, you called it something. Can you share what you called it in the film? Your daughter hinted at that when I talked to her.
Oh, my menopausal baby?
Your
post-menopausal baby.
You call it your post-menopausal baby.
Yeah, yeah.
This is your baby, this project, this program is. But how did you even learn about it? Tell us how you learned about it.
Yeah, I was reading an Episcopal National newspaper, and there was an article about two women that went into a women's prison in Texas doing this. And I had been frustrated for a while because I didn't feel that our diocese was doing anything about this, or at least the two counties that I'm involved with, Wayne and Ontario. And I thought, we could do this, and started talking to people. And it's really not that complicated to set up. And a year later, we started.
You started the Storybook program, and you know, so we're talking Ontario County Jail, and in a minute we're going to start to work through some of the numbers, because the film tells a lot of personal stories, but it gives you a lot of numbers that help illustrate why this program is necessary. But also, I think the broader question that I'm going to ask Linda about in a second is if she's trying to tell us something about incarceration in general. But Claire, for you then, what was the initial impact? Did the jail said okay? Were the inmates willing to let strangers come in and say, yeah, bring me a book, I'll read it?
Most of them were. And it's really very funny because one of our volunteers is a retired judge. And one day he walked in to this room full of inmates, and this one woman looked at him, stood up, strode across the room, grabbed his hand and said, hello, judge. She was that relaxed. And the program is relaxed, too. There's not a lot of stiffness or tension. Everybody sort of does their own thing.
And so now what the film shows you is that volunteers will come in, they'll bring these books in, and, you know, the inmate will go down and kind of select a book. You know, how old is your child? Well, here's one for a child that's 7 years old. It's probably perfect. And Linda, when you finally convinced them to let you in to see it, what did you notice? Take us through the process that you saw.
I think I came in once first by myself, and then I think I came in once with like a little mini tiny camera and did some sort of sketching, you know, video sketching of what could this be. But it was so... It was just so personable. These volunteers are coming in twice a month, and they're working with, you know, with all these people, and they don't ask them why they're there. They don't, you know, proselytize about what their beliefs are. There's none of that. It's we're here to help you with your children. And it was really just beautiful. It's a 2-hour window that they do this, you know, each time at the jail. So it was really tricky. I had a great partner in Ray Maynard and Crystal Pix, and we would bring in three cameras at a time to make the most of this 2-hour window. And I would be interviewing people in one room, and Ray and Don or Doug or someone would be filming the readings going on or the selections. And so it was tricky in that sense, trying to get everything done within the 2-hour window.
And having the trust, I think, of the people in the jail, of the inmates who often don't want a camera in their face, are dealing with enough of life in incarceration. And yet a lot of these people are in there, as you say, for, I'm looking down the list, petty larceny, forgery, nonviolent criminal possession of a controlled substance, those kind of things. And you gain enough of their trust to let them see those moments.
Yeah, it was really sort of hit or miss. Sometimes you went in and everyone wanted to be on camera. And I had to explain it was an independent documentary and not a reality show and not some sure. big budget thing that they were going to immediately be on. But I explained, you know, this is a film that we want to make, and we want to make it so that it can help other parents and other families that are incarcerated. If people see this movie, maybe they will start up other programs, or there'll be research. There's not any research. You know, we interviewed this literacy expert in the film about, you know, all about literacy and early childhood education. And her first question after seeing the, you know, a piece of the film was, where are the studies? How is this affecting children? Where are the studies? And I said, I'm the filmmaker. Hopefully someone else will work through and create those studies and make that happen.
There is one moment in the film, later in the film, where one of the people you talk to brings up the idea that that if you are incarcerated and you do stay connected to your children, there is growing research that indicates your recidivism rate will be lower. And I think we all just want to see more.
And not just that, but rate of incidents at jail decreases. Rate of success, successful reunification when the parent comes out of jail increases. So it's really, really a win-win situation. I mean, we want people to get better, right? We don't, I hope, really want to just lock them away forever and throw away the key and give up on them. We want people to make more and the best lives they possibly can.
Well, with Linda's permission, we're going to listen to just some of the sound from the film. I know these are technically still sort of rough cuts, right?
Right.
Because the film's been in process and it's on the cusp now, but I think it still sounds really good. So what I want to listen to first is just a collection early in the film of these inmates reading to their children. So you're going to hear a number of voices here. And just imagine that there is a toddler, there's a 5-year-old, there's a 7-year-old on the other end, finally hearing a parent's voice after they haven't seen them, and they know that some of them didn't know exactly where they are, some do know exactly. Let's listen to this selection from Turn the Page.
The bear broke the trail, and he made it so wide. The moose, who was giving the birds all a ride, could quickly and easily follow along as the birds on his back sang an improved song, which is only caw, caw, and merely tweet, tweet, but was shared and by sharing grew more and more sweet.
You know what you need, Arthur, said Buster. My never fail, always succeeds, 100% guaranteed secret good luck charm. He reached into his pocket and produced a shriveled carrot. Arthur made a face. Use this and you can't miss, said Buster. He handed the carrot to Arthur. You're sure about this, said Arthur? 100%, absolutely double sure guaranteed.
Here we are at Grandma's house at last. I can't wait to tell her all about all the brave things I would do if I could drive a fire truck. See the little girl run to her granny, like you run to your granny when you come home? And it looks like they had a Mercedes. Woo, they got a nice car, bud. D-N. I see you on December 23rd, bud. Love you. Bye.
That's a selection of the inmates reading. Big smile on Claire's face. Now, have you seen in the intervening years since you helped start this program, have you seen the kind of growth that you hoped? I mean, I don't know how much you've been able to follow up, Claire, or even know what the impact is. Have you seen an impact?
I really don't know, because the inmates come from all over.
Yeah.
It's not as though they're centralized in one county or one town. But I do know that it is a very popular program with inmates, and some of them come in and say, oh, yes, my brother was in the program or my sister was. Mm-hmm. And so it gets, I think, high ratings among our target group.
And I also think in watching the film, which introduces us to some of the volunteers, a man named John Thompson, among some others, who give their time to come in and just help out, to help choose a book, to help with the program. And you see them having short conversations. They're not there for hours on end. And as Linda said, they're not proselytizing. But I think we're focusing on the kids, rightfully so. I also wonder if the volunteers are sending a signal to someone who's incarcerated that the world still cares about you, that eventually you will not be incarcerated, that you are a person, you're not a number in a jail, and that we care about you in some sense. Did you feel that way, Claire?
Well, over the years, we have had three volunteers, none currently, that had all managed to get through rehabilitation from severe, what's the phrase, drug and or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And they are prized volunteers because, number one, they first have seen these inmates outside at NARC meetings and AA meetings and such. And two, they are coming in as a visible sign that they were able to break their addiction and are now functioning as good members of society. And to me, that's just the best possible volunteer that we could get.
Well, let's hear from Lainey then. Lainey's a recovering addict who you'll meet in the film there. And she's talking here just about exactly what you just heard from Claire. This is Lainey Doolan. Is that
yes, Lainey, Doolan.
Lainey Doolan. Let's listen.
Being a recovering addict and understanding why people are here, how they got here, understanding being a parent and being away from a child. My children saved my life, and that's probably why this is more important to me, too. That was the first time in my life that somebody actually came in and said, you have to make a choice. You're either going to be a mother or you're going to be an addict. And I wanted to be a mother.
That's Lainey. That was powerful stuff. Linda, you want to tell us just a little bit about the impact that Lainey has in the film?
Yeah, I mean, Lainey was pretty wonderful, like Claire said. I mean, she would always say to me, you know, I talk their language. She's like, I feel more comfortable with the people that are inside.
They can relate to her. She can relate to them.
Yeah, and she's, you know, she was very funny. She's like, I don't let them get away with anything because, you know, there's been some things that have been a little, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Fishy, but she just calls them on anything. And so for what you were going back to saying about the volunteers, yes, it's about the kids and it's about the parents, but it's also who are these people that are coming in that are using their free time to help with this literacy program at a jail? And it's people like Lainey. It's people like Walter Gage, who's the retired city court judge out of Geneva. It's all these different folks that think it's that important enough and want to give of their time to do it.
Were you surprised, Linda, that there aren't programs like this in just about every jail?
Yeah, like what you were saying, such the simple idea. It's like, of course, it makes sense. They don't have massive budget that they operate on. It's quite tiny. And it doesn't take masses amount of time. And it's win-win besides, you know, lowering recidivism and incidents in jail and all those wonderful things. It's also the kids are cultivating literacy skills. They go back to these books and, you know, and CDs over and over and over and over again. And so that's a win-win too. You know, there may be more than 50 out there, but often they're done through churches or little tiny groups that I may not have found newspaper reports on, or they don't have a website. But again, when you think of how many jails and how many prisons we have in this country, it's nowhere near.
Oh, no.
Right.
And it's just not common. I mean, it's just it's not really something that is common or even thought to be logical and part of rehabilitation. Often it's incarceration and you're out. And we'll talk about that later in the film. In our second half hour, we're going to get into more of the numbers and what incarceration is in this country right now. Because this film also really hits you with a lot of that. But Claire, I know you want to weigh in as well.
Well, I just wanted to mention that at the present time, there is a startup storybook program at the Monroe County Jail. And it's modeled on our program.
That's great.
So Rochester is hurrying behind us.
Well, that's great, don't you think? I mean,
oh, of course. I mean, it grew out of our participation in the diocesan committee.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, this is, I say logical. I mean, I know that's editorializing here, but you know, we've talked on this program about how tough it is for people to reenter society, whether you're a violent offender or not. What you've been incarcerated at all. We've had conversations about banning the box, yes or no. We've had conversations about what employers ought to do and ought not to be required to do. But this is just about helping families stay connected to kids. And one of the things that the film really struck me about was that you go to prison, you go to jail, there's not really a plan for what happens to the child. I guess the family figures it out. There's a plenty of cases where it's a single parent who's going to prison, and then you hope there's grandparents or something happens. But even if it's a two-parent household, then all of a sudden, what if the one parent who's still left, not incarcerated, has to work? Well, you have to figure out more there. What if there's not grandparents locally or alive? What if you don't have family around? All of those things, I guess, Claire, society doesn't really figure out. I mean, you kind of have to figure it out as you go. And these families, I mean, nobody's thinking about that when you have a child. Well, when I'm incarcerated, here's what the plan's going to be, right?
Yeah, say foster care.
Yeah, exactly. And where they end up here. And that's another thing that the film made me think about, Linda, is how do we get to a point where there's, a better outcome for kids?
Yeah,
parents are incarcerated.
You know, I don't know what that is, what the big fix is at this point. But as we were saying, is that if a healthy connection is maintained between parent and child during incarceration, that the chances are so much better all around. And I don't know that Storybook can fix everything, but I think it's a really, really great and important tool to have in the kit to build that so that that the chances are better and that it's higher chance for success down the road.
Let's listen to a man named David Seeley in the film about why read to kids. He had a daughter and a stepson when he was incarcerated, and this is from Turn the Page. This is David Seeley.
You know, your body may be locked up and inside a correctional facility, but they can't lock your mind, heart, and soul up. As long as you can stay focused, not let negative thoughts get to you, and as long as you can be positive and keep moving forward, it may not seem like it, but you're helping your child.
So remember, Ben, you can always do what you set your mind to. Always stay positive and be good for your mom. I love you, buddy. Love, David.
That's David Seeley reading to his daughter and stepson there. That's going to get you when you watch the film. You just got to be ready. This is an emotional film in so many ways. Let's listen to Colleen Alexander, whose six-year-old son, six, I think, was Gavin. And her prison sentence, her jail sentence was only, I say only 4 months. I mean,
but in the life of a child, that's significant, right?
I say only compared to some of the other inmates, some who didn't know when they're getting out, didn't know when they'd see their kids. Colleen was hopeful right at the start of the film. You get hope that she's going to get, some reduced time and get out. But even those 4 months, you know, all of a sudden, six-year-old Gavin is being cared for by Janet, Colleen's mom. Mm-hmm. And this is Colleen talking about how hard it is to be a parent in those circumstances.
It's hard to be a parent in here. I mean, you know, the little things that I miss, you know, As little as, you know, will you get me cereal? Will you, you know, I need a drink of water. And now it's like what I would do for those times again. Even to hear his voice, to be like, Mom, I'm thirsty. Or, you know, breaks my heart.
You think about as a parent, the day-to-day, any parent, especially if you're, you know, maybe a spouse out of town, maybe you're a single parent, 2 or 3 days in a row of a lot of, kid doesn't want to go to bed on time, or I need this, I need that.
Mom.
Yeah, it grinds on you, sure. But conversely, any parent who goes away even for a weekend, you come back and you go, boy, I did miss that. And then you hear Colleen, who's incarcerated, and you think, you know, it's really killing her. Just imagine Gavin on the other end of it, you know, wondering, where's mom? Why isn't mom here? What's the impact going to be? Even those 4 months was a very moving story.
Really, really significant. What also fascinated me when I started the project is that, you know, Claire and the volunteers have no connection. They never see what happens after they mail up the packages to the children. It's gone. Until next month, they go in and help the mom or dad read again. And they had no experience of kids' reactions or how it was affecting them. Like there's no attachment to that outcome for them, which may be very Buddhist, but they,
you're giving that to them in this film,
right?
And what's that like for you? I mean, that's really interesting. I hadn't even thought about that.
I think being a documentarian, you just have a very curious brain. Well, how does this work? Let me figure it out. No one's done it. All right, let's do it. So I just wanted to understand it. It was more of part of the story. You know, when I started reading the article in the DNC, it was about Claire, it was about this little program. And then you start doing more research and you see how much bigger of an issue it is. So it just, it was always unraveling at that point.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the storybook program in the Ontario County Jail, and the founder, Claire Creamer, is here for the hour, along with Linda Maroney, a filmmaker who heard that story and decided we needed to see it in a film. And you can do that next Thursday night at the Little Theater. Turn the Page will show at 7:30. And Linda, once again, the options for people to see it, when they should be there, et cetera, next Thursday night.
Yeah, next Thursday night, tickets are $25, which is a little hefty for the 7:30 screening. And I know, but it is going to a good cause. We will be able to finish this film. If I believe there's 10 tickets left for the $75 level where you have a pre-reception at 6:30. You get to meet people, not just me, but other people involved in the film. You'll get a credit in the movie, and you'll also have books donated in your name to the storybook program itself.
All right. And so, and beyond that, when this film is funded and starts moving, you'd like to take it where, I guess, where it goes, independent films. Ultimately, there's not a singular goal, but what's the goal as the filmmaker next?
You know, I think it becomes to submit to film festivals and also, you know, work on possible broadcast and work on community screenings where it can do the most good.
All right, so let's get a short break and we come back here. I want to ask Linda about some of the goals of the film. Outside of just telling the story of the Storybook Project, fair to say that independent filmmakers have a point of view.
Oh, they all do.
Okay. You do too, right?
Absolutely.
There's a moment in the film where someone says, prison holds no one accountable. And I want to dig into that a little bit more and dig through some of the numbers that the film presents as well, because they are stark. And I'll just give you one. How about since 1980, crime in this country is down 40%, but incarceration has quadrupled. That's a remarkable thing. When you think crime is way down, incarceration is way, way up. And it used to be that one in 125 American kids had a parent in jail or prison. Today, one in 28 kids. Just about every classroom in the country, on average, has at least one child with a parent who is incarcerated. Short break, more with Linda and Claire next. Coming up in our second hour, the life of Ota Benga, a man from Congo who in 1906 was imprisoned in a steel cage in the Bronx Zoo alongside monkeys, a human exhibit where the public came paying to see him, to laugh at him. This outrage was real, and the real story is told in a new book. We will talk to the author next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And if you have thoughts on incarceration, are we over-incarcerating our population? I'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Early in this film, Turn the Page, Linda presents a kind of collage of news reports on incarceration, various news agencies, Bill Moyers, among others, and hits us with some facts that are striking. As I mentioned, the crime rate in this country is way down, significantly down since 1980, about 40%. But the rate of incarceration is way up, it's quadrupled. The number of inmates in federal custody has gone from 25,000 in 1980 to 225,000 in 2013. The United States has 5% of the world's population, 25% of its prisoners. So the inevitable impression on your viewer is that we are over-incarcerating our people. Yes? Do you believe that?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, all the statistics out there, you know, definitely show that to be the case at this point. And I know that there's talks about that in the film. I do really want to focus on the kids and the families and how to make it better. You know, I think some filmmakers make movies to show what the problem is, you know, and that's all they feel they need to do because they're the filmmaker. They point out the issue. But I feel like we know the issue. It's there. We read about it. There's discussions about it constantly. But what's the fix? How do we push things along? It's easy to point out problems, but how do we try and start making change?
Yeah, and the clear point of view that you'll find in the film is that, number one, incarcerate fewer, but number two, those who are incarcerated, don't leave them on an island. Don't forget their children. Find ways to reach them, right?
Yeah, yeah. We did interviews early on with this woman named Elizabeth Gaines, who's the CEO of an amazing organization called Osborne Association. They've been running over 80 years, helping people, men and women that are dealing with criminal justice system. I think it's the longest running program or organization in New York State that have been doing this. And we went to her as the expert for our stats, for our information, for the whole background. And it turned out that that she had experienced this firsthand. She had two children, and her ex-husband went to jail for 25 years. And so we went and interviewed her daughter, Imani, and because all the families that we had been following, the kids are quite young, and they don't have that distance and that perspective to really voice how they're feeling and what they think. But Imani is their future, and she was able to explain what it's really like from the inside out to us.
Let's listen to Imani Davis, the second bite there, Val, 06193. This is Imani Davis talking about the stigma of having a dad in prison.
When I was little and I told people my father was in prison, I lost all of my friends. So I think that my family was incredibly aware of the stigma. We judge what we don't understand. There is no other experience like this in which we actually punish and abuse the children of someone for their action.
So that's Imani talking about what it was like and sort of the slow process of sort of reestablishing a connection with a parent years down the road. I mean, most people who are incarcerated are getting out sometime. And don't we care that they're not going to reoffend? Don't we care about the relationships they have, their chances to find work, their relationships with their kids' outcomes in life? Claire, are we over-incarcerating our population, do you think?
Well, you have the statistics. And I think perhaps they do, and I can't think of the correct phrase for alternatives to
incarceration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that program, which I think should be grown quite a bit. It's where people who have committed some sort of a crime get together with the person that they did the crime against, and they work out some sort of a resolution.
Restorative justice. Restorative mm-hmm. justice.
That's the word,
yep.
Yes.
Yep. And so you think that should be grown as opposed to...
I do
to,
think
yeah.
that should be grown because a lot of these things are petty. I mean, one person gets caught smoking a joint someplace and they're in jail. I mean, good heavens.
So before I get to your phone calls, just a quick comment from Mark, who is, hold on, let me get back here. Mark is asking, essentially in an email, is there a relationship between a lower crime rate and a high rate of incarceration? In other words, maybe it's good that we're incarcerating our population the way we are because we've reduced the crime rate. Maybe that's why the crime rate is down. That's what Mark is saying. Linda?
That, I don't know. I would have to do research on that exactly.
Doesn't sound like you would buy that on its face, though.
Probably not.
Okay. And let me get John in Rochester, essentially, I think, with a similar point. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, my point was the same. The crime rate is down. Incarceration is up. I think it's a logical conclusion that it helps in preventing crime. I can tell you, I've been a victim of, fortunately, minor crimes, although one fellow threatened to murder me one time, but that's another story. But and these... criminals are fearless, and they get so many chances. I've witnessed it myself time and time again that they're fearless. And
are you talking about violent crime, John?
No.
You're not, okay.
Other than the threat to murder me. But, you know, that fortunately turned out to be a lot of talk, but did go to court. But the fact is, more prisons, incarceration is up, and crime is down. I think that's an important correlation. And sometimes people are thick-headed. I can name example just in downtown of people that I see day to day.
So John, it sounds like you're saying that on balance, the average criminal, violent or not, is relentless, is committed to committing crime, that is going to commit crime. You seem to have that point of view, yeah?
Right. But and there's different degrees of it. You've got the criminals that are let's say, aggressive panhandlers. Then you got criminals that are violent, people that commit assault, rapes, etc. It's a different degree of crime. Drug users, for instance, I used to own a lot of apartments, and there's nothing more terrifying to have a drug user, whether it's a dealer or not a dealer, in your building, how it affects 16 other people, let's say, or 24 other people in that building, and the wheels of justice move very slow, not only the criminal part, but the civil part to try to evict somebody like that. And the fear and the anguish it puts those 24 other people, let's say, it's a 24-unit building, in that kind of situation. So these criminals, in the case of a drug user, people say, well, it's nonviolent. But the fear it does put into them, their neighbors and family, et cetera, is very high. So I have to say that more incarceration will decrease crime, and facts are proven.
All right, but let me offer a different possible scenario, John. And I understand the point you're making, that you see a correlation. High incarceration, lower crime rate. And I understand that. But what we know in this country is that we've got a pretty high recidivism rate, that locking people up the way we do is not really working very well, and it's a bad deal for taxpayers. I'll appeal to you on conservative grounds there. If you're a taxpayer and you want the government to spend less, we need to be more efficient with incarceration, because a lot of people are going back. And so let me pose a different possible scenario. Yes, there are some people who are committed to whatever crimes you're envisioning and talking about. I get that. There are others who made one bad mistake at one time in their life and are not committed to committing crimes throughout their lives. They get incarcerated, but that incarceration, whether it's 4 months or 4 years or whatever it is, makes it very difficult to find work later, to repair relationships, and their desperation, their lack of ability to pay bills, leads them back to crime. So I see two possible scenarios here, and I'm open to evidence, but do you think that that is possible?
Well, the thing you're forgetting, Evan, are the victims. In a minor case, so-called minor case of a drug user, a minor drug dealer working out of a building. And that, to me, is pervasive.
I'm not forgetting the victims. I promise you. There's two questions I want to ask you about that. First of all, not all drug dealers and not all drug doers are the same, but someone smoking a joint in their basement, who's the victim?
Well, it could be the family, it could be the neighbors in the apartment building, etc.
Yeah, it could be no one, though, right? Could be no one.
It could be an example for young kids within that building. The young kids start smoking dope. I've seen that happen also. So, are there examples of criminals being unfairly imprisoned? Yeah, it does happen.
Sure.
But all in all, I think you said it. You said it all.
Okay.
High incarceration rates, lower crime rates.
And John, the other thing I would say is we're not forgetting about the victims. I'm worried about future victims if recidivism rates are high. That's why we have to, again, thinking conservatively here, let's spend fewer tax dollars if possible. Let's have fewer victims. So if someone's incarcerated, we darn well better do everything we can to make sure they're not going to be incarcerated in the future, because that means more of an impact on their family, their kids, and whoever is victimized, right?
Well, I think it's a good investment jail these people. And I'll go a step further. David Sweat, one of the escapees who murdered a police officer a
That's
number
about
of years
the
ago,
most extreme example
got,
you can choose.
Got an extra 3 to 7 years. He should have got capital punishment.
No, I understand. John, thanks for the phone call. And I understand the point on someone like David Sweat. And we're not going to derail into a capital punishment discussion on this program, not because I don't care about it, but because that's not the aim this hour. But that's the most extreme example you can choose here. On the far other end is somebody smoking a joint in a basement, and there is no victim. I understand. Those are extreme examples here. But the goal should be, overall, fewer people committing crimes, and those that do, don't do it again. And that's sort of what this is about. So that's the aim of this discussion. I hope it's productive, and I appreciate John's phone call. If someone else wants to weigh in, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. There's going to be a chance for a discussion after the film next Thursday night. Turn the page after the film, a discussion?
Absolutely. On we'll have Claire there, so probably some of the other volunteers. Colleen might be there herself. Many of the filmmakers, Alice Haskins from Ontario County Jail, possibly Sheriff Pavro, but I'm not sure yet if he is attending or not.
Okay. 50% of incarcerated people, by the way, never get a visit from their children. And that is a remarkable thing to think about. You see it in the film. One of the people involved in the film, you know, hadn't heard from a child since incarceration started. You know, you wonder about the fate of that relationship. And when it comes to how many people have, who are in prison, have kids, our rate of incarceration has changed that. It's now more than 50% of incarcerated people in this country have a kid under the age of 18. That's in the film, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sobering. It's sobering. Often the children are not told where their parents are because, you know, embarrassment. They don't want the child to see them in that light, or they're afraid of the child going to school and talking about mommy or daddy being in jail and being stigmatized. So I remember there was one interview we did where I asked, where do your children think you are right now? And she said, well, they think I'm having a mommy timeout.
So there's one moment, I think, where a child said, and where is David or daddy? He's at work.
He's at work. Yeah. Yeah. And they're at work for months or, you know, and obviously at some point, children figure it out. Visitations we discuss in the film, and it's difficult. Often you can only have two people at a time, and if there's more than one child, who gets to go? And often going into jails and prisons is not the easiest thing for children to, you know, it's scary for them. And parents don't want them to see them that way. So it's very difficult in that sense to have those connections. I mean, we were doing this at Ontario County Jail, so most of the people were relatively close, but there's also prisons that ship people miles and miles and miles away. And so how do they get there? Can they afford to travel? Phone calls are quite, I mean, you could do a whole show on that. You know, it's very expensive, phone calls to jails and prisons. So how do we make this fix? How do we maintain a connection?
Let me get back to the phones, and Paul in Irondequoit is next up. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, we've had a lot of people released from jail. We've had some bad experiences with them getting out. And the one thing that I always see there is when a person gets out, they have to have an occupation of some sort to keep them busy and provide income. Well, you know, we've got the New York State Department of Labor. And I think if they worked with the prison system, you could arrange for the person to get a job. An extreme thing would be, well, the next job that comes in, that's the one you're getting, that they'll accept you. And the prisoner wouldn't have a choice in it. You know, they're coming out on parole. But other than that, they may be able to, you know, actually, select something that they know about. You know, it just seems like the whole system is uncoordinated to where, you know, the person coming out really, you know, here you go. You're out. You're on your own. Have fun.
Yeah,
Paul, and that's the end of it.
Paul, thanks for the phone call. 600,000 prisoners released every year. That's another stat from the film. It's a lot of people.
I don't think we had that in the movie.
It wasn't in the movie?
No.
Somebody said 600,000 to 700,000.
It doesn't mean it's not true. It just wasn't in the movie.
I came from somewhere in my research. That's the problem when I'm digging into these things. It's a lot. It is hundreds of thousands of people every year in this country, Paul. And that's a good point. And part of, I think, what this film does is at least it sparks this conversation.
Right.
It doesn't propose a solution for every one of these, but people are talking about it more now. And that's part of what Linda Moroney wants with this film, right?
And I think that's what the goal is of any documentary, is to create discourse about whatever the issue is, whatever it is. And you know, nothing will ever change unless we all have discussions from various points of view about how to make things better.
Sure. Dina in Rochester has a very good question about this. Go ahead, Dina.
Hi, thank you very much. I love this program, and I just wanted to know, if someone is not able to read, do you have volunteers to teach them to read?
So if an inmate is illiterate, can they find a way to participate in this program, right, Dina?
Yeah, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Great question. Very good question. Claire Creamer founded the program. Claire?
Well, our program does not do that, but there is literacy volunteers in Canandaigua, and I know at one time one of their volunteers was going in and working with inmates. But they have several people that do rehab. They've got BOCES teachers. They usually get several diplomas a year, or what are they called?
Yeah.
A
GED?
GED, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, they get their GEDs. If you're under 18, it's not voluntary. If you're over 18, it is. And they have a lot of programs for the inmates. A lot of them are relating to drugs or alcohol. But they talk about trying to teach them to use computers and life skills. And mm-hmm. at one point, everybody in the jail had to learn how to do CPR, which is a very good skill to take wherever you go.
So there's a number of ways they're trying to support
yes.
people, Dina, and that was a very, very good question. Let me get Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I just want to respond to what John said because, I mean, that's just part of our problem. You know, you can take numbers and coordinate them and say, okay, our crime is down 40% because our population is up by several hundred percent. But that's irrelevant. That's coordination. That's not a result. And I can't believe that you send people off to jail to learn how to be crimes, and you don't think that has any effect on our society. So it just seems to me that we need to investigate and take information and react to it. We don't simply assume that by putting everybody in jail, we're going to reduce crime. And I like this program because I think it gives these people in jail another way to think about the world and interact with the world. And that's much better than having them go to jail and be trained how to be better criminals. Thanks very much for the show.
Bernard, thanks for the phone call. There are moments in the film where I just find myself saying, I want to volunteer. I want to do what John Thompson's doing. I want to go down there. Claire, does the program need volunteers?
We always need volunteers, yes.
So how would someone get in touch with the program?
Well, they could contact me, I guess.
Oh, you better be careful, but tell us how to do that.
Well, then maybe they should. All right.
There's a lot of people listening.
I'll
but that's
take
good,
it
though.
Back. They should contact Lieutenant Minute, M-I-N-U-T-E, at the Ontario County Jail. She is in charge of the whole section where they the program section.
All right, Lieutenant Minute at the Ontario County Jail helping coordinate the storybook program.
They always
need volunteers, and there are some great stories there.
Yeah.
Let me grab one more quick phone call, and then Claire's going to do a little reading for us to finish the hour. But Isaac, try to keep it moving. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I came late to the conversation, but I'm thrilled to hear about what's going on locally, but I think nationally a big problem is that there's a lot of human rights violations going on, you know, in our prisons and people, you know, and so that I think that lends to the recidivism rate, you know, for instance, mental health issues, not being able to get an education while they're in prison. And I know there's arguments against that, but I also think that's a significant piece to that issue.
Yeah, Isaac, thanks for the phone call. I'm starting to see a lot of comments come in, Joel, among others, saying the same thing here, that there's a that there is a detrimental effect if we dehumanize.
Right.
And that's a lot of what I know that Claire's program tries to do. It's humanizing people. It's giving them a connection to their kids. So, Claire, you want to read, we've got about 2 minutes. You want to read a letter here?
Yes,
Who's the letter from?
The letter is from, at the time, a second grade teacher at one of the schools in Geneva.
Okay.
And I had ran into her at a cocktail party, and she was telling me this, and I said, would you please write it? And she did. Quote, it has been a long month for one of my second graders. I teach at West Street School, and I have one little girl whose mom was arrested about 3 weeks ago and placed in the Ontario County Jail. My student was very sad about being with her grandma and not her mom. She missed her mom every day and had her hopes dashed more than once in hoping she would come home, and did not. Last week, this little girl's face was so animated when she came to school, I knew she must have some news about her mom. She came in with a book, Judy B. Jones, and a tape that she had received from her mom. The excitement was only enhanced by her telling everyone it was her mom's voice, her mom. Reading the story, she asked everyone to listen to it. I sat with her as she listened in our listening center in our classroom again and again to her mom reading the book. It touched the heart of every adult who came into the classroom. Thank you so much, all of you, for giving this sweet little girl something of her mother to hold on to as she awaits her return home again. Keep taping the books and keeping this program going. It is touching lives. Thank you again. Signed, Mary Ann Hanna.
I just got a text from someone listening who says they are in tears hearing that. Claire, it's a beautiful way to end the program. Thanks for what you do. I know you care, and your volunteers care so much for the people who are incarcerated. And the message is, these are human beings. These are folks just like all of us, and we all want good outcomes for them. And thank you for taking the time to come in and tell us the story here, Claire.
You're very welcome.
And it's Lieutenant Minute. Don't call Claire. Call Lieutenant Minute at the Ontario County Jail if you want to volunteer and get involved there. Linda Maroney has put the film together. It's Turn the Page. You can see it next Thursday night at the Little Theater. And maybe you listen to the program, but you've got a friend who didn't get a chance to hear it or hear about the discussion. It's a great chance to kind of continue the discussion and to really see it. You got to see the look on the kids' faces and the parents as they read to them from prison. So that's Thursday night, thelittle.org. You want to contact the Little Theater to go out and support Turn the Page if you'd like. And thank you so much, Linda. Really moving film. So I appreciate you taking the time to do it and come in and tell us all about it.
Thank you for having us here.
All right, short break and much more Connections is next.